Hello, everybody. This is Play Ball, and I'm Dan Hirschberg. Here we are. It is in the middle of the baseball season now, I guess a third of the way through. And we do have with us today in the studio someone who pitched in the major leagues, and he's a Seminole native, Greg Jones. Greg, thanks for coming in.
Well, thank you for inviting me, and thank you for having me.
So let me ask you this. You're originally from Seminole. You grew up here. And tell us a little bit about that, growing up in Seminole. Did you play Little League baseball? And
yeah, that's an interesting question because of what maybe younger families know community baseball to be now with the onset of travel baseball and Legion baseball still existing, but not as prevalent as it used to be. But as you mentioned, Little League baseball at the SYAA, right there around the corner from the high school, progressed through the elementary and the middle school, and obviously participated in Legion baseball through the high school and the sports at Seminole High School.
And then you went to Seminole. When did you graduate from Seminole High School?
I graduated in 95.
95. So, and obviously Seminole High School has a tremendous tradition with, you know, a lot of guys that were drafted by Major League Baseball, or maybe they went on to college and had great careers there. How did that play into it back in 95? Were you aware of that, or is it something that as kids you're like, whatever, you know?
Yeah, like I said, with the elementary school and the middle school being across the street, it was very common for the athletes from the high school to visit the elementary school and the middle school, whether it was on game day and they were wearing your uniform for football and basketball or baseball, softball, soccer, with the girls' sports as well. So as a young student in those grades, kindergarten through eighth, you saw the athletes coming over, and to you, they were big leaguers.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, it was neat to see and a goal of mine to be them one day. So to answer your question, yes, I was very aware of the sports at the high school, but also in particular the success of the baseball program.
And when you were in high school, you also played football. You were a quarterback. You played basketball. I don't know what position you played in basketball, but so you're a three sports star. How did you end up settling on baseball? Were there offers for football or anything?
Yeah, I had offers throughout all of the sports. At the end of the day, my goal and my dream really as a kid was just to be on television. That's kind of how I framed it in my mind. You know, I was just a little kid, maybe 10 years or younger, and a game would come on television, whether it was the College World Series, because college baseball wasn't as prevalent on television, or college basketball with March Madness, which I still think is great today. And obviously the bowl games, which isn't that big a deal to people these days now because of the playoff system. But mm-hmm. when those games came on television, you know, going to college and playing college sports, and then eventually professional ball, because that was the traditional path back then, that was my dream, that was my goal.
Mm-hmm.
So when I got into high school, I wanted to play all the sports. I didn't care which sport I had success in. I just, like I said, wanted to be on television one day as a little kid. That was my goal, and that's what I dreamed of and imagined when playing in the front yard and the backyard with my friends. And so as I progressed through high school, I kind of felt like baseball would be that direction.
Mm-hmm.
And I eventually got drafted my senior year in high school, and I'll be completely honest with you, when the local scout, Tom Kochman, called me the night of the draft, the first night of the draft, I wasn't not sitting next to my phone. This wasn't something I was really paying attention to. I got this call and was completely surprised, but it pretty much sank in at that point that my intuition was right, that baseball would probably be the path I would go.
Right. But you actually did not sign that year, correct? You went on to Pasco.
Hernando, right?
Yep. And why did you decide to do that?
Well, as I learned a little bit more about it, as I said, it was a surprise. So I had to educate myself, and my parents were a big help. And like I said, the local scout, Tom Kochman, who is a big figure in the community as far mm-hmm. as the support that he gives to the high school, the support that he gives to local baseball players, and the basketball team as well. I see him at those games all the time at the high school. I didn't sign because I didn't quite feel like I was ready, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it was a dream of mine, I just didn't feel like I was ready at the time. And going to junior college allowed you to keep your eligibility open. Same rule applies now. If you're at a four-year school, For example, Florida State, Miami, you're not eligible for the draft until after your junior year. Mm-hmm. So by going to junior college, I could keep my draft eligibility open and then pull that trigger when I felt I was ready.
So the following year, you were drafted again. But before we get to that, you're an outstanding catcher. You're an excellent hitter. And then eventually you get drafted and you're told you're going to be a pitcher. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So you're right. I did get drafted again after my freshman year. I did not sign. I went back for my sophomore year. And what is referred to as a draft and follow was a big route. Not a big route, but a popular route for players at that time, which meant that basically for 51 weeks, the organization has the rights to you to sign you at any time. Mm-hmm. The week before the next draft, that 52nd week, they lose your rights and you become a free agent and anybody can draft you once again. So as the next draft came around ahead of my sophomore year, I ended up signing as a draft and follow. There was a lot of talk of doing both, catching and pitching. There mm-hmm. was talk of just pitching, talks of just catching, and then maybe falling back on pitching. At the end of the day, like I said, I had the mindset back then that I really didn't care what I did. But I felt that my best tool was my arm, and I had the ability to throw strikes, even though I had very limited innings mm-hmm. In junior college, which may have been a total of five. So from that standpoint, I just felt like, you know what, this is my best opportunity. My goal is to play professional baseball one day. And so with the advice of Tom Kochman as well, with his input, which I valued and very much appreciated at the time and call him a good friend today, mm-hmm. With my parents and discussions, that's what we decided to do. I decided to start pitching and give it my best shot.
So was that kind of a tough transition? I mean, forget the mental part of it. You know, I guess the physical part, how to throw a curveball, how to throw a fastball, it's not just rearing back in high school, perhaps, right, where you're just trying to whip the ball in.
Sure. I personally don't think it was a tough transition. Catching my whole life, I felt like, was a big benefit of mine. Would it be different to go from the outfield, from the infield to the mound, where you're not calling games mm-hmm. or getting signs from the dugout and then talking about the pitches and what is working for the pitcher that day over the course of many years from catching? I think there's a big benefit of that. So for me, the transition was just a matter of learning how to attack hitters mm-hmm. and staying aggressive. At the end of the day, whether you're behind the plate or you're playing short or you're in the outfield, I think you're just competing. And that was my mindset of sports, and that was my outlook. Whether you're on the mound or you're in the box, you're just competing, and that's what the mentality that I took to the mound.
And I guess obviously going through the ranks in the minor leagues, that's where you kind of forged your whole pitching repertoire.
Yeah, that's right. I started throwing in 97. So that would have been.
Did they initially look at you as a starter or a reliever? How did that work?
Yeah, I think a lot of that was up in the air, but I was going to start off in the bullpen, just mm-hmm. kind of get short outings and pitch more frequently, mm-hmm. if you will. Starting pitching was not out of the question, but to start off, it was to be a reliever, maybe go an inning at a time, especially for that first season, which was a short season because mm-hmm. I was coming out of college ball. So I went to short season A ball in Boise, Idaho. And really learned how to attack hitters and maybe throw different pitches and find out what worked for me. Mm-hmm. Messed with a cutter, messed with a sinker, used a four-seamer a lot, slider, curveball, 12-6, more of a sweeper. Tried all of those things. Mm-hmm. Eventually locked in on a couple of things that I felt comfortable with. And that season was good for me, especially having catchers and being in a bullpen with pitchers who played major college baseball.
Mm-hmm. So I have to ask you, you grew up in Seminole. I don't know if you ever got out of state. All of a sudden, you're in Boise, Idaho. Yeah. What was that like? That had to be a little bit of a shock.
It was a little bit of a shock. There was a little bit of a post-draft workout in Arizona at the minor league complex in Mesa, Arizona. And then we went to Boise, Idaho. And you're right, being in Seminole most of my life and being an hour away at junior college, and when you go to play a junior college baseball, there aren't 10, 15, 20,000 people in the stands. So when you move on and you go to Boise, Idaho on the other side of the country, it's a little bit different. But what I thought was really cool was to start seeing different places and seeing different mm-hmm. players from different parts of the country and in a higher level of baseball really was my primary thought. But seeing different places, I looked at as just a blessing and an opportunity that baseball was providing.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, and where else? So you're in Boise. What other minor league stops did you have?
Boy, how long do you have?
Oh, boy.
Because I've bounced around quite a bit, mm-hmm. not because of success or failure. It just happened to be that that was the path that I took. Mm-hmm. Started with Boise, Idaho. I was in Mesa, Arizona, Lake Elsinore, California, Rancho Cucamonga, California, been to Edmonton, Canada. I could go on and on and on, but I've seen different parts of the country and played in a bunch of different places. But like I said, that's one thing that baseball provided me was travel and seeing different areas that I may not have seen all of those areas to this point in my life if I wasn't fortunate enough to play ball.
I mean, who would go to Boise, Idaho on vacation?
Unless somebody
was getting married, right?
That's a funny question because Boise, Idaho is a beautiful place. You start talking about northern Idaho and mm-hmm. and you know, Eagle, Idaho, McCall, Idaho. There's some places out there, and Boise State University has just exploded, obviously because of their sports, but it's the major university in the state. But just an absolutely beautiful place. So mm-hmm. I would highly recommend visiting. But before I went there, I would not have thought that.
There you go. So you go through the ranks. Takes a little while, as it always does. And then July 30th, 2003, you're finally in the majors. Tell us about when you got the call that said, hey, you're going up to the big time. And then your first experience.
We had just gotten back in town from Tacoma, Washington, another place that never thought that I would be able to see, from a four-game series. Most of our trips were four-game series. So we came back in from a four-game series, and I had just pitched 2 days in a row. At the time, I was closing. In the minor leagues, they had a rule with the Angels that you wouldn't pitch 3 days in a row, just how they took care of the arms. And that changed mm-hmm. once you got to the big leagues. Obviously, it's a little bit different at that level. So I had thrown 2 days in a row and kind of knew this was going to be a day of recovery and stepping back from the game just for a little bit, knowing that you're not going to pitch. We came home. We played a game against Oklahoma City. I went home that night. I went to bed. And roughly around 12:30 at night, my phone rang. And it was a 714 area code. Well, I was exhausted, and I just put it down. And for those that don't know, 714 is the Los Angeles Anaheim community. It didn't hit me because I was so tired. I put my phone down, didn't answer it. 10 seconds later, it rang again. It was in 714 area code. So I figured I should answer it, and I did. The manager, Mike Brumley at the time, who's had a long career in the big leagues coaching, played at the University of Texas, was a part of my journey, told me that I was going to be in Anaheim the next year, and I was going to the big leagues. And so now, as I was accustomed to, because I played so frequently on the West Coast, I'm now calling my mom and my dad, and it's 3 o'clock in the morning here, and I'm waking them up. But, you know, as I can imagine, they were happy to hear that news. The next day, and I'll tell you what, the next day, I was on a flight at 9 a.m. from Salt Lake. I was in Anaheim by 10:30. I was at the clubhouse at 3 o'clock because I was told not to come in at that time because that was the trade deadline and they were releasing Kevin Abier.
Uh-huh.
So when I got to the clubhouse...
That's a trivia question right?
That's right. So when I got to the clubhouse, oddly enough, my locker was right next to Vladimir Guerrero's. Mm-hmm. I mean, if that's not a you're in the big leagues moment, I don't know what is. Troy Percival's walking around, Garrett Anderson, you know, rest in peace, just sadly passed away, Sean Figgins, Alfredo Amezaga, Darren Erstedt, I mean, Tim Salmon. There's just a list of tremendous big leaguers, and my jersey was hanging in the locker. And 6 hours later, the phone's ringing, and I'm in the game, and Derek Jeter's in the box, and I'm on the mound. Roger Clemens had an 8-inning shutout at that point. I was in the game. I faced Jeter first. He popped out. Bernie Williams grounded out, Giambi walked, and Posada struck out, and I was sitting in the dugout, and my debut was over. It happened that fast, so it was a whirlwind for sure.
Wow. I mean, afterwards, did you celebrate? What was that?
Yeah, it was a very surreal moment. Like I said, I dreamed of this my whole life in the front yard and the backyard, mm-hmm. and it came to fruition. and of all people, who I personally think is one of the greatest, you know, big leaguers that ever played the game, is Derek Jeter. You know, maybe not statistically in the home run category, or, you know, I mean, his numbers speak for themselves, but just as a pure ball player, I would make an argument he's one of the greatest ball players of all time. To be standing on a mound facing Derek Jeter after years of pretending to be facing big leaguers or facing big league pitchers in the yard, and then to actually be doing it, I was having such a surreal moment where I was picking out parts of the catcher's mitt to hit when I was throwing my pitches. That's how much I was locked in, and I guess what a lot of people would refer to as just the zone. And it was really the only time I had that kind of extensive clarity playing sports. But it was tremendous, and it was just an incredible feeling. I called my parents as soon as we got done, and I went back to my hotel room and just really reflected on everything that had happened after a life of trying to accomplish a goal like that.
What 24 hours of unbelievableness.
That's right. Never forget it.
Wow. So you're in the majors for parts of four seasons with the Angels, and I guess you had some arm troubles that kind of thwarted things a little bit.
I did. I had a little fraying on the edge of my labrum. And, you know, after a hot start and really starting to become extremely comfortable with pitching at that level and being able to pick the brain of what was an incredible bullpen. And at the time, a very hard bullpen to break into with Francisco Rodriguez, Troy Percival, Brendan Donnelly, Scott Shields, just, you know, a tremendous bullpen, but also being able to pick the brain of those guys and learn what helped make them successful. I was coming into my own, really, I felt, as a relief pitcher, and had a injury to my shoulder, which, like I said, was a little fraying on the labrum. Had that repaired, and every year following that surgery, it just felt like I lost a little bit of strength. It just wasn't the same standing on the mound. I didn't feel that electricity going through my arm into the ball. So did the best I could to grind out the rest of my time there. Made it back to the big leagues after that. But like you said, that little bit of arm trouble, if that hadn't happened, I was really excited about the potential. But I have no regrets about my time, about the work that I put in, and my experiences.
Well, you got to, you know, live out your dream, and that's wonderful. So you're still in the Seminole area. Fill us in. What are you up to now? I know you're doing a little coaching. You work for an insurance company. Let's hear it.
That's right. As soon as I got done playing baseball, I had a friend in the community, Art Hartzell, who introduced me to the world of insurance. And going on 17 years now of working at Accentria over there off of 113th Street. Been a great company to work for. I deal in commercial insurance. I help business owners, commercial residential associations with their insurance. And I've continued to coach since I've always said I can't play anymore. So one way to remain competitive is to coach. I've coached in the travel ball circuit with a good friend of mine who's the head coach at Plant High School, Dennis Braun. And just recently, the head coach at Northside Christian asked me if I would help be an assistant coach there, and just finished my first year of doing that.
And what do you get out of that? What's, you know, I mean, you work with kids. I mean, you got to have some good feelings when you see kids, you're teaching them something and then they do it.
Right. You know what I primarily get out of it is I get the feeling of being able to challenge young ballplayers to go about the game and play the game right. I think there's a lot of avenues in which they can go now and, you know, not play the, as the game has changed, and you can't argue that, to me, competing and learning to play the game is still critical, and encouraging them that the one thing you can't stop as an athlete or a competitor or a ball player is somebody who just continues to get better. So what do I try to get out of it? I just try to get out of encouraging and challenging them to just continue to get better and maximize whatever potential that they have for themselves and not try to be anybody else.
Yeah, that's great. So a while back when I interviewed you for the Beacon Papers and then in the book Play Ball, Baseball in Pinellas County, you mentioned that you're a Braves fan. Now, we're in, you know, I mean, you got spring training with the Mets, the Phillies, the Yankees have a history here. You got the Tampa Bay Rays. How did you, I mean, you never played for the Braves, or how did you end up a Braves fan?
That's a good question. Every summer, my family would take a trip up to Georgia. Mm-hmm. My dad is originally from the Atlanta area, and I grew up a huge Braves fan. So I get a mulligan, because when I was growing up, there were no Rays. The closest team regionally were the Atlanta Braves.
That's true.
And I still think there's a large contingent of fans in the South that are loyal to the Braves because of that. Mm-hmm. Now, the Rays and the Marlins have tremendous fan bases, and they're great organizations. But I've just stuck with my team that I was a fan of as a kid. And we would go to a game every summer, once a summer. Mm-hmm. And I would go to one spring training game every year. My dad would take me out of school in the middle of the day, and we'd mm-hmm. go watch the Braves. And my hero growing up in baseball was Dale Murphy. So, you know, for me, it's always been the Atlanta Braves, and enjoy watching them still to this day.
Yeah. Do you have any other teams you like to watch?
I do enjoy watching the Rays. You know, former teammate of mine, well-versed in, Casey Kochman, played for the Rays, and I had some ex-teammates, Joel Peralta, who played for the Rays, but also Joe Maddon was a great resource for me within the Angels organization. And mm-hmm. when I was with the Angels mm-hmm. and Socha was managing, there were big league managers on that staff, with Ron Renicki, Bud Black, Mike Socha, obviously, mm-hmm. and I'm missing one at the moment. Renicki, Black, Maddon. And Socha. So, you know, I knew that when the Rays hired Joe, they made a tremendous hire. And, you know, in my opinion, it really kind of ignited what has been a tremendous run by them.
Yeah. Do you go to many games anymore? Or?
Yeah, we're actually going this weekend with my family. We're going to go over. I have two boys. I have a 21-year-old stepson. I have a 15-year-old son. And my wife, Sarah, we're going to go over to the game this weekend. And ironically, they're playing the Angels. That's not by design. But, you know, the Angels are in town. So I do enjoy going a couple of times a year and watching the games, you know, and try to take advantage of it when the Braves come into town as well.
Wonderful. Well, listen, thanks a lot so much for being here. It's really been a great discussion, and it's nice to see a hometown boy makes it big and is still here. Yeah. And
Well, I appreciate that, and I would be remiss if I didn't, you know, thank all those in the community, like Bill Brinker, who was a tremendous coach at Seminole High School, who played a big role in my life, and all the coaches at the high school that I played for and continued through college and pro ball. So, you know, it takes a lot of work by the individual mm-hmm. to achieve those types of dreams, but it also takes a village of great supporters to help guide the young athletes.
Well, if there's one thing I've learned at Seminole High School, it's that whole family feeling and everybody helping each other. It's amazing the number of volunteer coaches that come and help, mm-hmm. and it's really something. So,
no, I would agree. I still go to basketball, football, and baseball games on a yearly basis, and I enjoy going back to my high school and watching them play today.
All righty. Well, thanks a lot, Greg, for being here, and good luck down the line. And thank you, everybody, for listening to Play Ball. If you want to check in with me, and I have a Facebook page, DannyBaseball56, and tell us what you think. All right. Thanks. We'll see you next time.